Well, good morning, church. It is good to see you all here this morning. Go ahead and open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 9. So, we're going to see a little bit of a transition here in what Solomon has been talking about so far in his book. So, the last couple of weeks, if you've been here, you'll notice we've been talking a lot about the why is it this way? Why couldn't it be this way type of thing. Solomon has been making observations about life, observations that he's seen in his time, and quite frankly, observations that we see in our time as well. He's looking around, he's saying, you know, why do these bad things happen to the righteous? Why do the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper? Why is this something that just seems to happen over and over and over again? And when he got to the end of chapter 8, he kind of sums it all up, and he makes the statement, he makes it very clear. You know, in light of eternity, justice prevails. Injustice does not prevail. Justice prevails in the light of eternity because God is the perfect and righteous judge and nothing gets by him. However, he does get to the end of chapter and he points out, he says, there are some things that we're just not meant to know. God's ways are above us, and as much as we might try, as much as we may want to, there are some things that we are just not going to know. And yes, it still frustrates me now. I told you it frustrated me last week. It still frustrates me that there are some things that I just can't possibly know. Because I want to know everything. I'm a know-it-all. It frustrates me when I don't know the answer. It's not that funny, Joel. But in light of the fact that there are some things that we just aren't meant to know, Solomon kind of makes this transition now going into chapter 9. And the transition is really talking about things that are certain. Things that we do know. Things that, beyond a shadow of a doubt, we all can know and we all should know. And so he dives into Ecclesiastes 9. And the very first fact, the very first certainty that he points out is one that we've actually talked about before from this book. We've talked about this fact before, and it is morbid, and it is depressing. However, it's still a certainty, and I think you know what I'm going to say. Death. Death is inevitable. Look at Ecclesiastes 9, start reading in verse 1. He says, "But all this I laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God." That's a very key phrase. We're going to be coming back to that. That's a very key phrase here in verse 1, that they are in the hand of God. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Whether it is love or hate, man does not know. Both are before him. It is the same for all, since the same event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner, and he who swears is as he who shuns an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that the same event happens to all. Also, the hearts of the children of man are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that they go to the dead. But he who is joined with all the living has hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished, and forever they have no more share in all that is done under the sun. I know you all feel so encouraged after hearing that. But this is very, very important. You see, death is one of those topics, and we've talked about this before, it's one of those topics we don't like to talk about it. We don't really like to think about it. We don't even like to, like, acknowledge it, really. The only time we really talk about it or think about it or acknowledge it is when we are face-to-face with it. If we're face-to-face with it, then we've got to talk about it, we've got to deal with it. But any other time, we just try to, you know, it's out there. And this has nothing to do with being saved or unsaved. Death is a certainty whether you are saved or unsaved. And that's what Solomon is pointing out here. He says, you know, it doesn't matter if you're rich or you're poor. It doesn't matter if you're righteous or wicked. It doesn't matter if you know God or don't know God. It doesn't matter in the end because you're going to die. Spoiler alert. You're going to die. We're all going to die. But what's very, very important and what I really want us to see as he's going through this, look at what he said in verse 1 though. He said, the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Now, this is a very, very important phrase because what he's pointing out here is several things he's pointing out here. Number one, he's pointing out the sovereignty of God. He's pointing out that God is sovereign. God is in control. He's in control of all things, whether that is life or whether that is death. God is in control of all of it. The author of Hebrews talks about death, and when he talks about death, he talks about it as an appointment. It's an appointment, and it's not an appointment that can be rescheduled. It's not an appointment that can be canceled. It's an appointment that is going to be kept because it's an appointment that has been set and is in control of by God himself. God's in control of it. But this does not only talk about the fact that God is in control. It doesn't only talk about the fact that God is sovereign. It's also talking about God's protection. What safer place is there to be than in the hand of God? There is no safer place to be than in the hand of God. See, what Solomon is pointing out here, he's saying, yes, death comes to all. Physical death is something that every single one of us will, in fact, experience. We'll all have to go through it. However, the difference is the righteous, those who know the Lord, those who honor the Lord, those who have given their lives to Jesus, they're in the hand of God. Which means that when going through death, there's nothing to fear. Because when you're in the hand of God, there is protection, there's safety. Nothing can harm us when we're in the hand of God. And that's what he's pointing out here. And I love how he talks about this. He continues to talk about this. He continues to say, you know, everyone's going to die. However, the righteous, those who know the Lord, they are in God's hand. They are under God's protection. Yes, they're going to die. Yes, they're going to experience that physical death. However, because we are under the protection of the Lord, death is not something to fear. Why is death not something to fear? Because God already defeated death. Jesus defeated death. Why should we not fear death? Because Jesus defeated it. Death cannot defeat us because it did not defeat him. Church, that's good stuff. I don't know why you're so, like, your bumps on a log this morning. What is wrong with you? That's good stuff. Are you getting this? Death cannot defeat those who are in the hand of the Lord. There you go. Solomon, he continues, he talks about, you know, life is better than death. And if we're looking at this from an earthly perspective, and understand, the further we get into this, he's looking at this from that earthly perspective. Because notice the phrase he uses, that same phrase we've seen throughout this book, under the sun. Under the sun. If you have nothing more than an earthly perspective, you don't have any sort of heavenly mindedness in this matter, then death is looked at as the great equalizer. Doesn't matter what you did in life. Doesn't matter how successful or unsuccessful you were. Death is the great equalizer. You can't get out of it. However, Solomon points out here, he says, you know, there is hope. Look at verse 4. He says, but he who is joined with all the living has hope. And he says, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. That's actually very strong language that he's using here. See, in Hebrew culture, a dog was something that was gross. It was something to be avoided. It was something that nobody really wanted to be around. See, dogs were not house pets like they are today. When the kid comes up to mom and dad and says, Mom, Dad, can I get a pet? They're not saying, can I get a puppy? That's not what they're saying. I really hope they weren't wanting cats. Moving on. A dog was not something that was held in high esteem in Hebrew society. Dogs were pack animals. They were scavengers. They lived in the streets of the city eating garbage. Dogs were not sought after. They were avoided. However, a lion's a kingly animal. A lion is majestic. And so when Solomon says here, better to be a living dog than a dead lion, you got to understand, for a Hebrew reader, a Jewish person who is reading this, that is very strong language. But why does he say it? Because let's think about this. He says, you know, there's hope for those who are living. The living still have to deal with death, but those who are dead, they're done with it. There's no more thinking about it. There's no more experiencing it. There's no more dreading it. It's just done. So here's the question, you know, what is the hope? What is the hope that he's talking about? Because if we're alive, then let's face it, we still have to think about death. We still have to be preparing for death. We have to face it at some point in the future. So what exactly is the hope? Yes, I might be a living dog today, but there's no guarantee I'll be a living dog tomorrow. So what is the hope, Solomon? The hope is not found in the present. The hope is not found on earth. That hurt. The hope is not found on earth. The hope is found in eternity. Because what do we have to do with life? When we say we have to prepare for death, we have our life. We have here. We have right now. We have the day that we are alive right now to be prepared for the eventuality of death. And it's not something that you should be putting off. Why should we not be putting it off? Because it's going to happen. The only thing that is uncertain about death is when it will occur. That is the only uncertainty about it, because it will happen. So when Solomon says there's hope for those who are alive, he's talking about the hope of Jesus. He's talking about the hope of the Lord, the hope of having eternity with the Lord, because that is something that we have to prepare for now. Once we're dead, we cannot prepare for it anymore. The preparation has to have already been done. If we die without having made preparations for eternity, then it's too late. Better to be a living dog than a dead lion, because the living dog still has hope. The living dog still has an opportunity. The living dog can still say yes to the Lord. The living dog can still give himself over to the Lord. The dead lion has no more time. See, the question is, church, what are we doing about death? Because we all handle it in different ways. We make jokes about it. We make light about it to try and take some of the sting of it away. We might be afraid of it. We might just avoid it altogether. Everybody deals with death in different ways. But the wisest way to deal with death is understanding that it's going to happen. And understanding that once it happens, I've got to face eternity. Now, where am I going to face that eternity at? Am I going to face that eternity with the Lord, or am I going to face it apart from the Lord? The fact that you are alive, you are breathing right now, if you haven't put your faith and trust in Jesus, then you have an opportunity to do that. You have that opportunity right now. Do not waste the days that you have been given by putting off death, by putting off eternity in hopes that you'll never have to face it, because you will. If you continue to put it off and treat it like it's something you'll never have to deal with, then eventually one day it's going to get you and you won't be prepared for it. The Solomon says, death is a certainty. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. But as long as you are still alive, there is hope. Because you still have the opportunity to put your faith and your trust in the Lord. So don't squander that opportunity. Verse 7, it says, go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Enjoy your blessings. You know, this is one of those points that I feel like, you know, I've told you before, sometimes when we're going through a book together, we're going through a study together, I get to points and I get to passages of Scripture that I feel like I'm just kind of beating a dead horse. Like I've kind of gone over it, like over and over and over and over again. And this is one of those things. However, for me, I'm actually very, very thankful that Solomon says this again. Enjoy your blessings. Enjoy what God has given you. And the reason that I'm so thankful for this is because this is one of the easiest things in the world for us to forget. This is one of the most common things in the world for us to just set aside, for us to treat like it's not something to be remembered. Enjoy the blessings that God has given you. We've talked about this before. Joy, true joy, is not found in the blessing. It's found in the blesser. However, the blesser giving the blessing wants us to enjoy the blessing. When God gives us a gift, he gives that gift to be enjoyed. He doesn't give that gift to make us miserable. He gives it to us because he wants us to enjoy it. I give my kids gifts. I want them to enjoy them. I don't give it to them so that they'll throw it in the trash can and say, well, that's not what I wanted. He says, go, eat your bread with joy. Drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. What Solomon is doing here, he's pointing out two very, very important things. Number one, everything that you have, and he actually lists out specific blessings in this passage, but essentially, everything that you have, it is a blessing from God. It is a gift from God. And number two, the ability to enjoy that blessing actually comes from God. Follow me on this. In order to actually enjoy the blessings of God, we need to be living a life that is pleasing to God. It's in living the life that is pleasing to the Lord when he actually gives us the ability to enjoy the blessings that he's giving us. Because in order to truly enjoy the blessing of God, we don't actually look for fulfillment in that blessing. We simply acknowledge it, we take it, we enjoy it for what it is, but understand that our true joy, our true peace, our real satisfaction doesn't come in what has been given, it comes in who gave it. And that is what Solomon is saying here. Go, eat your bread with joy, drink your wine with a merry heart. And he lists out specific blessings. He talks about food, he talks about drink, he talks about clothing, he talks about the necessities of life. So often, we think of the necessities of life, and we just think, well, you know, I just kind of got that for myself. Very easy, just after church, a lot of us are going to go out to eat. We'll go to a restaurant, we'll sit down somewhere, or we'll just hit a drive-through, and we'll go home. But we think about that, and we just think, well, you know, I just got me some food. It's not that big a deal. Without actually recognizing and realizing, it's a gift from God. The clothes that we are wearing at this very moment, it's a gift from God. And we think about this. We forget about this so easily. But not just the necessities of life, because he goes on and he starts talking about just the extra blessings that God gives. He says, verse 9, enjoy life with the wife whom you love. Our spouses, they're blessings from God. They're gifts from God. They're to be enjoyed, they're to be loved, they're to be respected, to be cherished. We're coming into the time of Thanksgiving, and this is the time where we actually purposefully tell ourselves, okay, I've got to be thankful because it's the fourth Thursday of November, so I'm going to be thankful today. But really, as believers, we're supposed to be thankful every day because we're supposed to be enjoying the blessings of God every single day. Enjoying them for what they are. And not thinking, I really wish that this was different. I wish that this blessing was something else. Because let's be honest, we do that. We take the blessing that we have, and because it's the same blessing that we had yesterday, and the day before that, and the day before that, we take the blessing and think, this just isn't really worth it anymore, because it's the same old, same old. Let's be honest, that's our mindset. We think that. Ah. Pop-Tarts for breakfast again. The same pillow I had last year. We look at these blessings and we don't actually take the time to enjoy them when we have them. I saw a picture a little while ago, and it really just stuck with me, and it really illustrates, I think, what Solomon is talking about here. It was a painting of a man and his dog, and they were sitting on this bench, and the bench was on an overlook, and it was overlooking this scenic view of mountains, and there was a river cutting through the middle of these two mountains, and the sun was setting in the background. And the man and his dog are sitting there looking at this beautiful scene, and there are two thought bubbles above them. There's one thought bubble above the man and one thought bubble above the dog. And the thought bubble above the man says, that's a nice view. I've got to remember that I need to get to work and do this tomorrow, because if I can do this and I can close this deal, then I can possibly put a little bit more into retirement and I can actually retire early. And it's just this long, drawn-out thing about what this man needs to do in order to get more blessings for himself. And then the thought bubble above the dog was so small, it was just, this is a beautiful scene. I'm glad I get to be here with him. And that was it. Stop overlooking the blessings that we have in front of us because we're looking forward to a blessing that we don't even have yet. Because honestly, that's what we do so often. And when that is what we're doing, when that is our mindset, then essentially we're taking the gift that God has given us and setting it aside and saying, do better. Whatever your hands find to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Enjoy the blessings of today, because you are not guaranteed tomorrow. Solomon just said, death is a certainty. It's going to happen. We don't know when it will happen. We know that it will happen. So enjoy what God has given you today. Enjoy the blessings of God. Find your joy in the Lord and enjoy the gifts that He gives you. Enjoy your families. Enjoy your clothes. Enjoy your food. Enjoy your jobs. Enjoy everything that you have, because all of it is a gift from Him. Verse 11 says, again, I saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. For man does not know his time. Like fish that are taken in an evil net, and like birds that are caught in a snare, so the children of man are snared in an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. Well, let's be honest. If there's anything that is absolutely certain in life, it's that life is uncertain. We have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. We try to plan it out. We try to think, okay, I've got my week planned out. I've got my month planned out. I'm the world's worst at this. I've got an agenda in my office completely filled with things that I expect to be able to do over the next few weeks. And past experience should tell me that I'll probably be able to do like two of those things, because life is uncertain. Things just happen. Things come up. But because life is uncertain, there's a couple of different ways to deal with that. One of the ways is to just live in fear. Because you never know what's around the corner. What could happen? What might this lead to? What might be the consequence of this? But that's not what Solomon is saying to do here. He's saying, yes, life is uncertain. There are things that you can't control. There are things that you can't know. There are things that you won't even be aware of until they happen. But that is no excuse. That is no reason to live in fear or to think, I can't continue on because this has happened. I can't continue on because what if something else happens? No, this is a call to endure, to move forward. Yes, the uncertainties of life will befall us. But when they befall us, we are meant to continue moving forward. Why is that? Go back to verse 1. The righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Yes, uncertainty befalls us, but you know what? If you've put your faith and trust in Jesus, if you have a relationship with the Lord, that means that you're in His hand. And the uncertainties of life, what they really are, is an opportunity for God to show you just what that looks like. What does it mean to actually be in the hand of God? Let those uncertainties come and see Him carry you through them. When Laura and I first found out that we were pregnant with Karis, I came home one night and talking to Laura, and we had been talking about kids. We'd been talking about possibility of having kids and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we weren't trying to have a baby. We weren't trying to prevent having a baby. We weren't trying to have a baby. And so I wasn't really thinking about it. I wasn't really prepared for it. And so I come home one night and Laura says, "Honey," I said, "Yeah, we're pregnant." "Huh." Fascinated. So I went into like a 24-hour tailspin where I'm just thinking of all the different scenarios of what life's going to look like over the next 20 years. And so I'm just thinking all these different things that could happen. The good, the bad, the worst, the terrible, the absolutely catastrophic. I'm thinking about all these different things. And after about 24 hours, I actually calmed down. I was able to take a breath, like, okay. And I realized two things. Two things with absolute certainty, and they gave me peace about it. Number one, Laura's pregnant. Okay. Deal with that. Number two, God is still in control. It took about 24 hours to remember that, but once I got there, I felt better. And the reason that I felt better is because, you know what? As a believer, Laura being a believer, we're in the hand of God. Yeah, the uncertainties of life, they come up. And we all know, having a baby, incredibly uncertain. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what that baby's going to end up liking or disliking or wanting to do or not wanting to do. You don't know any of this type of stuff. And me and her being new parents, everything's uncertain. I don't even know how to change a diaper. I do now. Okay. But I mean, I'm just thinking like all these different things, like potty training and getting them to eat and all this. I'm like, I don't know how to do any of this. And it was so scary. And honestly, it just gets scarier by the day. But God is in control. And if there's one thing that I can say with absolute certainty about my life, about Laura's life, yes, there have been a lot of things that we've had to go through that blindsided us, that we were uncertain about, but at the end of the day, we got through it because God was in control and God brought us through it. And church, there's nothing more certain than that. There are a lot of uncertainties in life, but you know what's greater than the uncertainties is the certainty. God is the certainty. The fact that if you're a believer, you're in God's hand. He is leading you and he's guiding you. He's directing you. He's protecting you. That certainty never changes. And what's truly amazing and truly incredible about it is we actually see it and we actually get to experience it, but only when life gets uncertain. We only truly notice being in the hand of God when things don't go the way that we expect them to. Verse 13, I've also seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it and besieged it, building great siege works against it. But there was found in it a poor wise man, and he, by his wisdom, delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that poor man. But I say that wisdom is better than might, though the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise, heard in quiet, are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. So on the surface of this, this looks like a really sad story. This tiny little town, this tiny little city is being besieged by a great army, and everything is looking dire. There's no way they're getting out of this. Until this poor wise man from the city uses his wisdom, and through his wisdom, defeats the invading army. That's amazing. Hey, bravo, we can make a movie about that. But at the end of the day, the poor wise man was forgotten. Nobody remembered him. He remained a poor wise man. And Solomon says, just like he has said throughout this book, wisdom is better than folly. And wisdom is not better than folly because it guarantees riches, because it guarantees fame, because it guarantees any of these nice, luxurious things that we'd like to have in life. Wisdom is better than folly because one sinner destroys much good. One sinner destroys much good. Honestly, the only thing that really just jumps out at me, that I tend to just picture when I see that, when I read that, is I picture Adam and Eve in the garden. There was so much good. There was nothing but good. There was no evil. There was no sin. There was nothing like that. Until Eve is tempted. She believes the serpent. She doubts God. She believes that God is trying to hold something from her. So she takes the fruit. She tells Adam. Adam takes the fruit. And then sin enters the world. Everyone that is born into sin. It just takes one sin to destroy so much good. But you know what? On the flip side of that, it took one righteous person to destroy so much evil. And that's exactly what Jesus did. We said earlier, Jesus defeated death. And since he has defeated death, we, as his followers, we've defeated death. And that's so true. But you know what? Even more than that, Jesus has defeated evil. Jesus has defeated sin. He's overcome and he's conquered all of it. When he went to that cross, he took on the sin of the world. He became sin on that cross. The Father had to turn his face from the Son. Because Jesus took on all of our sin. And the wrath of God was poured out upon Jesus on that cross. because sin has to be punished. And so when the Father pours out his wrath upon the Son because the Son has taken on everyone's sin, Jesus gave up the Spirit, he breathed his last, and he died. And then he was laid to rest in a tomb, and on the third day, he rose again. And it's by that very fact, by his resurrection, that we know that the certainty is all sin, all evil, all of it, it won't last. Jesus took the very sin from us. He took my sin. Me, I was born a sinner. I'm born into sin, just like everybody else. I'm born into sin, and I got some stuff, let me tell you. I got some really ugly, terrible stuff in my closet. And Jesus took that, and he washed it away. So that even me, the disgusting sinner that I am, God can look at me and not see all that sin, not see all of that terrible, evil, wickedness, but he can look at me and he can see the righteousness of Christ. As we go into our invitation this morning, if you are here and you have put your faith, your trust in Jesus, then that's what God did for you too. That's what Jesus has done for you as well. He took your sin and he replaced it with his righteousness. So here's my question for us today. In light of the certainties of life, how are we living? Because yes, death is a certainty. Uncertainty is a certainty. As believers, we should be responding to the certainty of death with urgency, knowing that at any moment, anybody could die. And that means that somebody could die without Christ. They could die without knowing the gospel. And we, the bearers of the gospel, have a mission. We have a responsibility. We have to have that sense of urgency to take the gospel to those who have not heard it, who don't know it, because at any moment they could die. And if they die without the gospel, then they go to hell. As believers, we don't have to be afraid of death because Jesus conquered death. But we have to understand the certainty of it, and it has to give us that sense of urgency that today is the day of salvation. Today is the day that I need to share the gospel with this person. Today is the day I have to take the gospel to that coworker, to that family member, to that friend, whoever it might be, because there's no guarantee for tomorrow. And yes, life is uncertain. But just because it's uncertain doesn't mean that we get to crawl up into a corner and just let life pass us by. We still have responsibility. We're still here. And the fact that we're here means that we have an opportunity today to serve the Lord. We have an opportunity today to honor the Lord. And that can look a whole lot of different ways because he's gifted us all in different ways. But whatever God has gifted you with, whatever he has called you to do, just because life is uncertain doesn't mean that you stop doing it. It means that you continue to do it, and when the uncertainties happen, you see God bring you through them. You experience what it truly means to be in the hand of God. So if you're here this morning and you are a believer, how are you responding to the certainties of life? Because there is a right way and there is a wrong way. And if you're not responding to them in the right way, then I would encourage you to take a few moments this morning The altar will be open. There's cracks and crevices in between all the boxes. Or you can just take a few moments in your seat wherever you are. But spend some time this morning with the Lord. Confess to Him, maybe you haven't been living in the right way. Maybe you haven't been approaching the certainties of life in the best way, in the proper way. But that's okay because, well, there's life, there's hope. And you have an opportunity this morning to get that right with Him. And if you're here this morning, you've never put your faith and your trust in Jesus. And I encourage you to do that this morning. Where there's life, there's hope. And right now, you have life. Right now, you have that opportunity. Right now, you can say, Lord, I want to put my faith and trust in You. God, I know that I'm a sinner, and I'm sorry for my sin. Please save me from my sin. You can do that this morning. You can do that right now. I cannot promise you anything beyond right now. I can promise you that death is a certainty. I can't tell you when it's going to happen. I can only tell you that it will happen. And I hope and I pray that you'll be ready for it when it does. So however the Lord is leading, however He's speaking to you this morning, I'd ask that you would respond. Respond in your seat. Respond here at the altar. We'll have counselors, Pastor Jonathan and I will be up here. We'd love to talk with you and to pray with you. But however the Lord is speaking to you, whatever He's saying, however He's leading, respond to Him this morning. Father, thank You for this opportunity that we have had. Lord, thank You for Your word. Thank You for the certainties that You've shown us in life. And Father, thank You for the uncertainties. Thank You that no matter what, as long as we're Your child, we're in Your hand. We're safe. We're protected. You're going to carry us through it all. Father, I pray that You would speak to hearts and to minds this morning. Lord, show us what we need to know. Convict where we need conviction. Exhort where we need exhortation. But Father, may we all respond to the Holy Spirit, however He's leading, however He's speaking to us this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.